Oh, thank you, Tony. That's very kind. There may have been a slight exaggeration in there, but we'll let that pass. That's fine. I want to thank Fields Institute for inviting me. It's certainly an honor to be included among this very distinguished group of speakers. My subject, as Tony said, is propositional proof complexity, and I wish I could say it has the same interaction with many areas of mathematics that the previous speaker, Percy, mentioned, but it's a new field, and perhaps by the time all the open questions are solved, it will have developed such interaction. One thing it does build on, certainly, is computational complexity theory, and I will presuppose a nodding knowledge of that area, including entropy completeness. So I'm talking about propositional proof systems. We'll fix this definition of propositional formula. We have atoms or variables, P, Q, R, connectives and or not, parentheses. Tautology is a valid propositional formula, one true under all truth assignments. There's a simple example of a tautology representing modus ponens. Now we'll use this very general definition of proof, propositional proof system for the tautologies. It's just a polytime function taking strings onto the set of tautologies. And so if f of x equals a, then we will say x is the proof of a. Now here's the interesting definition. The proof system is super if there's a fixed polynomial P of n so that every tautology has a proof of length n has a proof of length at most P of n. So the fundamental question in the area is, does there exist such a thing as a super proof system? So recall that co-NP is the set of all complements of languages L in NP. And the simple fact is that NP equals co-NP if and only if there exists a super proof system. And the reason is that the set of tautologies is complete for the class co-NP because it essentially corresponds to the complement of the satisfiability problem, and that's for NP, and just from the way I've defined super proof system, it's evident that the set of tautologies is in NP if and only if there's a super proof system. Of course, if you have a super proof system, the proof of a tautology A serves as the certificate showing that the propositional formula is in the class. And now complexity theorists tend to believe NP is not equal to co-NP, and so that's equivalent to believing there's no such thing as a super proof system. So if we believe that, then we should be able to prove that standard proof systems are not super. But that turns out to be remarkably difficult, even for the textbook class of systems, Frege systems. And so I'm going to come back to this question at the end. Should we really believe that NP is not equal to co-NP? Maybe there are superproof systems, and relate that to the more basic question, does P equal NP? That'll be later. What I want to do now is talk about specific proof systems and our success in proving at least some of them are not super. So resolution is the most basic one and the most basic success. Resolution applies to, it's a refutation system, doesn't quite fit my definition of proof system, that it's a refutation system and that only applies to formulas in conjunctive normal form. but it turns out to be, to give us a proof system in my sense. But first, just to remind you, the resolution has only one rule from a clause P or A, and another clause not P or B conclude A or B, and from a set of clauses one derives, tries to derive the empty clause, and of course the empty clause is derivable if and only if the original set of clauses is unsatisfiable. So here's a simple example of a unsatisfiable set of clauses and a resolution derivation of the empty clause. Now this theorem here just shows how to turn resolution into a proof system in the general sense that I defined it. And namely, if you're given an arbitrary formula A, can be transformed in polynomial time to a CNF, condensed normal form, formula A prime, such that A prime is unsatisfiable if and only if A is a tautology. And this fact then allows you to turn resolution into a general proof system for tautologies. And the proof uses an idea that goes back at least to the 60s. I found it from Zeighton's paper in the 1960s. Of course, you can't just put not A in conjunctive normal form because in general you get an exponential blow up of the size, so you wouldn't get a polytime transformation then. But what you can do is introduce a new atom for each subformula of A. If B is a subformula A, you introduce the atom piece of B, and then you put in clauses asserting that piece of B is equivalent to whatever its principal sub, the atoms corresponding to its principal subformulas. And then in the end, you add, conjoin the literal not. Oh, I think there's a redundancy there. piece of A, asserting that the A is false. And of course, if A is a tautology, then that whole thing is going to be unsatisfiable, and conversely. So, there we go. So the first big result in the area was Hawkins' proof that resolution is not super. In order to show a proof system is not super, it's usual to start with a class of tautologies for which you think the system doesn't have short proofs. And it's also usual that the class of tautologies are generated by some combinatorial principle. And a very useful combinatorial principle in this field is the pigeonhole principle, which just simply asserts that you can't place n plus 1 pigeons in n holes without at least 2 pigeons occupying one of the holes. And this is easily stated as a unsatisfiable set of clauses. You introduce variables or atoms Pij. Pij says pigeon I gets sent to hole J, and that these are you're asserting the negation of it, and of course that's going to be unsatisfiable. So you put in clauses of this form for pigeon I. Each pigeon I has to get sent to some hole, and as you do that for each I, 1 n plus 1, and then these clauses assert that two different pigeons, I and J, can't sent to the same hole K. So there's n cubed different clauses, and they're collectively unsatisfiable. What Hawken proved is that any resolution refutation of this set of clauses has to be exponentially, has to have exponentially many clauses. And this result has been extended. In particular, one of the nice general results by Cavallo Samaretti, building on a paper of Urquhart's, is that if you take a random instance of set of clauses with a certain probability distributions, in particular, for example, if you fix the number of literals in each clause to be 3, and you fix the clause variable ratio in your set of clauses to be some constant C, but let the number of variables go to infinity, then then if you take a random such for fixed C, fixed N, fixed 3, for example, take a random set of clauses, then as long as that clause variable ratio is greater than some threshold, approximately 5, then with high probability the clause set will be unsatisfiable. And what's remarkable is this result that in fact any resolution refutation of it will have to be exponentially big. These lower bounds for resolution turn out to be important for a number of reasons, because resolution itself is an important method underlying, for example, automatic theorem proving devices. But it's also the case that satisfiability checkers, algorithms, seem to be very interesting and important. There's a very big industry developing efficient programs to solve the general satisfiability problem. And there are even industrial such programs on the market. And the fact is that most of them depend, are variations of the original Davis-Putnam procedure or the Davis-Loveland procedure going back to the early 1960s. And they have the property that if you feed the tester an unsatisfiable formula, unsatisfiable set of clauses, then from the computation, of course, it's going to say, no, it's not satisfiable. But from the computation, you can extract a resolution refutation of that set of clauses. And what that tells us, of course, is that we get an exponential expected lower bound, certainly an exponential worst case lower bound on the time it takes for all these satisfiability testers. So I want to talk about interpolation, which is another method of that has been used to show lower bounds on the links of proofs in specific systems, including resolution. And this goes back idea to the Craig interpolation lemma. If A implies B is the tautology, so say we have 3 disjoint sets of variables P, Q, and R, and A and B share common variables P, and but A has Q and B has R. Then there's a formula I that just depends on the common variables P, which is an interpolant. So A implies I and I implies B. Those are tautologies. That more, less audio, more visual, I think. Now the point is this, the formula could be exponentially big for the interpolant in general. But this theorem tells us that in the case you have a resolution refutation of the negation of A implies B, which is A not B, from that, and you can extract, if it's interesting case A is a monotone in T, you can extract a circuit, a polynomial size monotone circuit C with this property. It defines an interpolance. So this is, the switching property is the interesting thing. If C of T is zero, then A is unsatisfiable, and C of T is one is B. In other words, once you fix the value P, the point is once you fix values for the variables P, of course, since this is unsatisfiable, these A's and not B become disjoint. And so one or the other of them has to be unsatisfiable, and C tells you which one. So this was exploited to show that to get a lower bound in a very interesting way, to get a lower bound for a certain set of unsatisfiable set of clauses. And what's nice about this is that it uses it brings in complexity theory. It uses the Razboroff alone upon a lower bound for monotone circuit complexity. And this describes what to do. You fix N and consider an NO graph, and A, P and Q, the idea is that the variables P correspond to the edge slots in the graph. The N choose two edge slots in the graph. And A of PQ asserts G has, you fix K, has the K clique, and not B asserts that G has the K minus one co-clique, which is something that's incompatible with having a K clique. A co-clique, K minus one co-clique would mean K minus one. You can partition the nodes into K minus one disjoint independent sets, each of which, and all edges between different independent sets are present. So now the conjunction is unsatisfiable. And if there were a short resolution refutation of that conjunction of clauses, you could extract this monotone circuit that distinguishes, small monotone circuit that distinguishes between the two cases. But Razboroff and Alombapana proved that that's impossible, that such circuits have to be exponential in size. So now we've been successful analyzing resolution. Let's talk about more general proof systems. I think the canonical kind of proof system in the field is what we call Frege systems, or used to be called Hilbert-style proof systems. These are the sort of things you see in a logic textbook, and this is an example. Well, if we restrict connectives or not, but in general you have to specify a Frege system, you specify finite and many axiom schemes. And these are tautologies, but they're tautology schemes, meaning A can be any formula. And then finite and many rules of this form, some formula or set of formulas on top implies a formula on the bottom. And again, they have to be of this form, schemes, where you can apply any formula for A, B, and C. And you get a Frege system provided it's sound. These are really tautologies, and the rules are implicationally sound. Bottoms are logical consequences of the top, and the whole system has to be implicationally complete. And what's nice is that all Frege systems are equivalent. They p-simulate each other, meaning given one Frege system and given two Frege systems, There's a polynomial time transformation that takes a proof in one into proofs in the other of, for the same topology. And furthermore, Denson's propositional system, if you take his sequence system, LK restricted to propositional formulas, also yields a proof system equivalent to Frege's system. So we have here a large class of robust, nice, large class of a proof system of all of them equivalent. So so then the question is, are Frege's systems super? And we don't know. We don't really have much idea of how to go about, if we believe they're not, we have no idea how to go about proving they're not super. So that's a major open question in the field. Now, what we have is kind of negative results that say the certain methods won't work on showing they're not super. And here's one that shows that the method I just talked about before of feasible interpolation can't be used. And I've made this definition uniform feasible interpolation, which is slightly different than what the standard definition. But I think it's a natural thing to define, a natural way one might try to show that a system like Frege's systems has a lower bound, is not super. But let's make the definition that you have this uniform feasible interpolation if given a reputation R of an unsatisfiable conjunction of the form we've been talking about, with variables P in common here. And then if you're given values for the P, then you know one or the other has to be unsatisfiable, then you can determine which one is unsatisfiable. So, for example, resolution does satisfy this condition. From a resolution reputation, you can, it's even stronger, it's a monotone condition, but anyway, certainly in polytime you can determine which one is unsatisfiable. So what this group of people, the P here very often is Tony Petossi, by the way, so I should mention that, as she's involved in, along with, and the K and P are Krychek, Pudlak, in this case I think it's Krychek, Pudlak, Bonnet, Petossi, Laws. So, and they prove, though, that Frege systems don't admit this kind of uniform feasible interpolation unless you can factor integers in polynomial time, which is thought to be impossible. And if it is possible, you can break RSA encryption schemes and so on. So the proof idea, one idea going back to Krychek-Pudlak of for showing something doesn't admit interpolation is consider a one-way permutation on strings. So H makes map 0,1 to the end of 0,1 to the end, and it's assumed you can compute it in polytime, but you can't invert it in polytime. So then you can get these two tautologies here for each I between 1 and n, a 0 asserts that H of Q equals P, but the ith bit of Q is 0, and A1 asserts H of R equals P, and the ith bit of R is 1. Now, they can't both be true if H is a permutation, if H is 1,1, because P and Q would have to be equal if they're both mapped to R. So that's unsatisfiable. And but you see, if suppose now you could, so the conjunction is a tautology, But suppose, so this, suppose it, though, for a particular proof system, you had a short proof of this, of unsatisfiability, then if it admitted uniform feasible interpolation, you could determine the ith bit of H inverse of P, and therefore invert the function, which presumably is impossible if it's a one-way function. So that would be a general method, and this idea was applied very effectively by the net Patassi Raz to the particular Diffie-Hellman secret key exchange scheme. And so what they showed is, so the A's and B's are something like that, except they come from the key exchange scheme, and they showed that if, and, oh, the main thing they showed is that for this scheme, this has poli-sized Frege proofs, Frege refutations. That was the work, and not only that, has poli-sized TC0 Frege refutation, so if you can even restrict the formulas that appear to be bounded depth formulas involving unbounded fan and threshold gates. So it's even a stronger result. So we do have a poli-sized refutation, and therefore, if Frege or even TC0 Frege admitted uniform feasible interpolation, then we could break Diffie-Hellman secret key exchange. And there's a result that means you could factor integers. All right. So that destroys that one method for showing propositional, let's, Frege systems and TC0 Frege systems are not super. But let's just talk about, even though we don't know how to do it, the first step would, if we think they're not super, would be to find a hard class of tautologies. And as I say, the good source for such tautologies is the combinatorial principles. What about the pigeonhole principle? Well, this result, which I think is the sort of the apex of lower bound theory and proof complexity, shows that that for bounded depth, so-called AC0 Frege systems or bounded depth Frege systems, which is the restriction that each formula in the Frege proof has to be at most depth D, even though you allow unbounded fan in ands and ors, but the alternation depth between ands and ors has to be at most D. So with that restriction, if you fix D, then there is still an exponential lower bound on the size of the proofs required to prove the pigeonhole tautologies. So that's a hard result, and it's defied attempts to extend it. For example, the next little extension would be if you allowed in your formulas, instead of just unbounded ands and ors, suppose you allowed parity gates with unbounded fan and parity gates, and it's still believed you can't prove the pigeonhole principles, but all attempts to extend the lower bound in the presence of parity gates have failed for the pigeonhole principle or for anything else. So for all we know, if you have unbounded parity gates, allow in your proof system, the proof system could be super. At any rate, getting back to Frege system, pigeonhole principle can't, there's a limit to how much we can use the pigeonhole principle in the field. Although, probably hundreds of papers have been written on the proof complexity of the pigeonhole principle. Nevertheless, there is a limit to what, how far we can push it, and this, we can't use it to get a lower bound for Frege systems. This is what Sam Buss proved, that in fact So the pigeonhole tautologies do have polynomial size for Eta proofs. And the reason is that they can you can count, and TC0 for Eta proofs too. Point is you can count using polynomial size propositional formulas. And in particular, you can define formulas AK in the pigeonhole variables that say pigeons 1 to K have to occupy at least K holes. So that concept can be expressed by a polynomial size formula. And then you can prove in Frege this implication was obvious. One pigeon has to occupy at least one hole, and you get implication A1 implies A2. Each time you add a pigeon, it has to occupy one more hole, and you can say that and prove it. And so finally you get N plus 1 pigeons have to occupy N plus 1 holes, but they're only N holes, so you get a contradiction. So that's an outline of proof. And intuitively, the reason bounded depth Frege systems can't prove, don't have poly-size proofs of the pigeonhole principles, because you can't count. That's known. That's one of the early successes in complexity theory. Bounded depth poly-size, that is AC0 formulas, cannot express counting. In fact, they can't even express the parity of the number of input bits. So that's the intuitive reason, you know, well, that kind of gets lost, I think, in the actual technique. To try to formalize that idea directly seems to be very hard. The proof is quite involved. All right, so pigeonhole clauses are no good as an example of hard examples for Frege. So what examples should we use? We need a more powerful combinatorial principle than the pigeonhole principle, right, to generate hard tautologies. Well, so Bennett, Beam, and Potassi wrote papers suggesting various examples, and a lot of them, such as the odd-town theorem and some combinatorial result, a lot of them depended on linear algebra. So I thought, well, why not just state what principles of linear algebra can be formulated as tautologies? That is, what universal statements are there in linear algebra that might be hard to prove? And so here's an example. If A and B are n by n matrices and AB is the identity, then BA is the identity. It's easy to state, for example, over the field of two elements, you put a propositional variable for each of the n squared, well, 2n squared variables in the two matrices. And that's, and you can just talk about the matrix product of A and B then in polynomial formula size. And so you can easily state this as a family of polynomial size tautologies, but the intuition is, in order to prove it, you need concepts from linear algebra, such as, for example, Gaussian elimination or determinants or inverses, things that cannot be expressed with polynomial propositional formula size, as far as we know. And because of that intuition, the conjecture is that these tautologies don't have polynomial size Frege proofs. So I'll call that conjecture A, because I'm going to refer to it again. And now take a diversion a little bit to talk about my recent student, Michael Soltis's PhD student, who was used this as motivation for developing a series of linear algebra reasoning. Just how hard is it to prove things about linear algebra, in particular these identities? So he developed a number of formal theories. The simplest is LA, and LA is a quantifier-free theory. It has three sorts of variables: numbers, which are used, natural numbers used for indices of matrices. It has field elements, elements of any fixed field, and then variables for matrices. themselves. And the so as far as axioms, usual axioms for plus and times for numbers, including induction on open formulas, and then you put in the field axioms for the field elements, and then it has the method of constructing matrices using lambda calculus. So, for example, you can construct A plus B by referring, if A and B are matrix variables, then you can refer to the ijth element of matrix A and the ijth element of matrix B. And this lambda term, the first two n's mean the, tell you the number of rows and columns in the constructed matrix. So this constructs the matrix A plus B. You can do A times B in a similar way. And then you can prove in the theory simple properties, ring properties of matrix, of matrix addition and multiplication. And this is a remark at the bottom. All the tautologies, all the theorems of linear algebra in the theory LA are field independent. They apply to any field. Now, but can LA prove this simple property? He certainly easily states this property. A, B equals I implies B equals I. Well, we think not. It can prove the equivalent of this and other similar things. I mean, things that any simple matrix identities that we can think of, either they turn out to be equivalent to this property or follow from this property. And the odd town theorem can be proved, for example. So basically anything we can think of that can be stated nicely in the theory, and it's true, it seems to be provable. But what I really mean to say is that follows from this one tautology here. So in some sense, this principle is at least an important principle of linear algebra in the language of LA. And of course, there's lots of other principles of linear algebra that can't be stated, but ones that can be stated in LA, this is an important one. So conjecture B is, though, that LA doesn't prove any of these. Now, this is a conjecture that has some chance of being, in contrast to the Fidesz on super, this is a conjecture has some chance of being proved, because I could imagine developing a non-standard model. LA is quite a simple theory, equational theory, or quantifier-free theory, and I could imagine developing a non-standard model. You're free to choose any field you want for the underlying field, because all theorems of LA are true for all fields, and then develop non-standard model of arithmetic and just find matrices A, B for which this law fails. And that seems to me a possible thing to do, although I'm able to work it out. Well, let's see, maybe I'll leave that. Let me just, to connect conjectures A and B, let me just do a slight diversion here and talk about, in general, the logical theorems of simple logical theories can be translated into propositional tautologies that have short proofs in some specified proof system. And this goes back to my 75 paper on polynomial time reasoning, and here it's an equational theory, and here the theorems that are equations, the provable equations about polytime concepts, can be translated into tautology families that have poly-sized so-called extended fingerprints. This is an example. So the point is, if you talk about numbers x, y, and z here, and w, if you fix their length n and think of them as binary numbers, numbers in binary notation, and then the atoms of your tautology are the bits of x, y, z, and w. And since this is a true statement, you can translate it into a poly-sized a tautology polynomial in N, and it has a poly-sized proof. And this Peres-Wilkie developed another kind of nice translation. What's nice about their translation is, in their theory, I delta 0 of R, you can formulate the pigeonhole principle for a relation Rij that says pigeon I gets mapped to whole J. And then when you translate their general scheme into a tautology family, you get the pigeonhole tautology, something very similar to the pigeonhole tautologies. Okay, so that's just background to, in a way, leading up to the assertion that you can translate theorems of LA into tautology families in the same way, but you have to fix the field, then you have to decide on the field. But if the field is, for example, finite, or if it's the rationals, then you can translate formulas, this isn't a theorem, you can translate formulas into tautology families in the way I've indicated, but that you can do it in general, for formulas in general. And the theorem is that, for example, over the field of two elements, or over the rationals, if you could prove this, any formula you can prove in the theory, the corresponding tautology family has polynomial-sized Frege proofs. And and over the field of two elements has restricted proofs over the AC02. So what this connects conjecture A and conjecture B. Conjecture A implies conjecture B. Conjecture A was that there were no, that the tautology versions of this don't have poly-sized Frege proofs. And conjecture B is that this is not a theorem of LA. And since if it were a theorem of LA, it would have poly-sized Frege proofs. Conjecture A implies conjecture B. So that's the connection. And you can think of, I guess one of the things I'm saying, both conjectures are interesting, the conjecture B is a uniform version of conjecture A and certainly has interest in its own right. I mean, that really, I think it's conjecture B that more embodies our intuition about what can't be done. And our intuition is always uniform. We can't imagine, I can't imagine how you would prove that these tautologies would have poly-sized Frege systems, Frege proofs, without, in fact, coming up with a uniform way of finding those Frege proofs, and so, in effect, you'd be proving that this is a theorem of a theory LA. Now, go on a little bit more into Soltis' thesis, let's talk about briefly what is required to actually prove this, these identities. You do need to be able to talk about linear algebra concepts. So the method chosen was Berkowitz's algorithm for computing determinants and characteristic polynomials, and that just requires matrix powering. So the theory LAP is LA, except now we put in this powering function P. P of AN is supposed to be A, matrix A is the power N, and we put in the obvious axioms here. LAP does describe Berkowitz's algorithm, and which computes the characteristic polynomial of matrix. So the question then becomes, can LAP prove the Cayley-Hamilton theorem that matrix satisfies its characteristic polynomial? That's what you would hope to be the case, and what we hope to be the case, but we haven't, and still might be able to, but we haven't been able to show that. What LAP can do is show the equivalent, though, of the Cayley-Hamilton theorem and other basic facts of linear algebra, including the axiomatic definition of the determinant and the cofactor expansion formula. And talking about propositional translations of LAP, since we're talking about matrix powering, then over a field, nice field like such as Q, that they'll translate into quasi-polynomial size formulas. And now if, so it seems natural to conjecture at least that these identities have quasi-polynomial size Frege proofs, because you can talk about the concepts needed to prove them, namely, for example, inverses in quasi-polynomial size. Unfortunately, that still remains open, because we haven't been able to show the Cayley-Hamilton theorem can be proved in this theorem LAP. Just one more extension for all LAPs. Here, the theory is extended by allowing limited universal quantification of matrices and induction on limited universal quantification. And two things about that. Now, finally, Michael worked out how to prove the Cayley-Hamilton theorem. And secondly, this is still a feasible theory. It still involves only polynomial kind concepts that can be embedded into the standard theories such as buses, S12, that involve only polynomial time reasoning. And so what's nice about this may be the first proof of the Cayley-Hamilton theorem involving only feasible, that is, polytime concepts. The standard proofs involve indirectly or directly the Lagrange expansion of the permanent, which involves n factorial terms, and is certainly not a feasible concept. So this does allow us to get at least polynomial-sized extended Frege proofs. So let's see. Just want to flash up this slide on extended Frege systems, because they're a very natural extension of Frege systems. And if Frege systems proofs involve NC1 concepts, that is, concepts involving polynomial formula size, then extended Frege systems involve polynomial time concepts, that is, concepts involving polynomial circuit size. And technically, to get an extended Frege system, you just allow, in addition to the Frege rules, you allow introduction of new variable, new atoms, P, by definition, and assert, you can assert that P is equivalent to A, provided P doesn't occur earlier in the proof and doesn't occur in the conclusion. And this allows you to abbreviate formulas, because you can string up these abbreviations, a sequence of these abbreviations, and then it allows you to represent formulas in a very concise way. But still, this may be all an illusion, and the basic open question is, does it really buy you anything? Can Frege systems P simulate extended Frege systems? Somehow, intuitively, this should be connected to the question of whether propositional formulas have the same expressive power as Boolean circuits. It's the same question because, in effect, the lines in extended Frege proof are like Boolean circuits. Although, I mean, that's the intuition. No formal relationship has been really obtained, or no convincing formal relationships have been. I guess there is one direction, if in fact these two classes are provably equal, so that you can translate every Boolean circuit into a formula of not much bigger, and prove that they're equivalent in the Frege system, simply then, yes, then you would get a piece simulation. But that's the best connection that we can make. I just want to mention briefly, there are other potentially hard examples for Frege systems. For example, consistency statements yield a whole class. Consistency of extended Frege itself can be easily formulated as a polynomial tautology family, and that's provable. And the consistency statements have poli-sized extended Frege proofs. And more basically, though, we think those statements don't have poli-sized Frege proofs, and if they had uniform poli-sized Frege proofs, then Frege systems could p-simulate extended Frege systems. And Jeremy Avogad found a nice combinatorial principle involving DAG-structured acyclic graphs, which is equivalent to this consistency statement. And the idea is to factor out logic from the combinatorial principle. So he found a combinatorial principle just about DAGs that's equivalent and has the same property. That the corresponding tautologies can be proved in polynomial-sized extended Frege proofs, but are unlikely to be provable with poli-sized Frege proofs unless Frege P simulates extended Frege. Okay, nearing the end here, one slide just to show on extensions of propositional calculus to quantified propositional calculus, because here the proof complexity has a little more success in describing what can be done than in pure propositional calculus. And let's stick to the case in which we allow existential quantifiers for propositional variables. So you can stick a bunch of existentially quantified propositional variables in front of your propositional formula. Just to remark, of course, the witnessing problem is then be complete. Witnessing problem being, given such a existentially quantified formula and given values for the p's, the free variables, find witnesses for the existential quantifier. Find values satisfying existential quantifiers if they exist, or determine they don't exist. That's, of course, the canonical. That's the satisfiability problem. Now, we call such formulas sigma 1q formulas, and Krajicek-Pudlak worked out a natural proof system for proving validity. So you can talk about this formula is valid if simply for all values of p, the free variable c, there exists witnesses x1, xn satisfying a. So that's a valid formula. Here's the system g1 that's complete, very natural system g1 complete for proving validity. It's based on Gensen sequence system and just using the usual Gensen rules for propositional calculus and existential quantifier introduction. So here's what to me is quite a remarkable, surprising result, tying in complexity theory. If you restrict the proofs, the Gensen proofs in G1 to be trees, so that just means you're not allowed to reuse a sequence in the proof more than once. you have to rederive it if you're going to use it again. That, you call that G1 star. That's a restricted or tree-like form of G1. In that case, G1 star is essentially equivalent to extended Frege system for the purposes of proving quantifier-free tautologies. On the other hand, G1 itself is associated with the complexity class polynomial local search, which is something invented years ago by Johnson, Papa Dimitriou, and Yannakakis with no idea of logic in mind. At a typical polynomial local search problem would be given an instance of the traveling salesman problem. Instead of trying to find an optimal tour, a shortest tour, find one that's locally optimal. That is, you can't shorten it anymore by interchanging a couple of edges. So that would be a solution to the polynomial local search problem. And it's thought, and there's evidence, that you can't do it in polynomial time, of course, assuming p0 equals np. So here's the result connecting. So G1 star is closely connected to the polynomial time class. So in particular, if you're given a proof of one of these formulas, a G1 star proof, and you're given values for p, of course, you know witnesses exist, but you can find them in poly time given the proof. So the proof tells you in poly time how to witness these quantifiers. On the other hand, if you're given a G1 proof instead of a G1 star proof, then the witnessing problem is complete for the class polynomial local search. So it's not polynomial time, and is very closely connected to this class for strange reasons, PLS. Okay, so now let's get back to the conclusion. What about this conjecture NP not equal to co-NP? So let's connect it with the more fundamental conjecture, does P equal NP? Here, complexity theorists, myself included, leave P not equal to NP. So why? So let me try to outline why. Basically, it's because computer scientists are really good at finding algorithms, or not only computer scientists, but complexity theorists are really bad at finding, separating complexity classes. I mean, that's in a nutshell the argument. I mean, to justify one, it's engineers and computer scientists all over the world make their living by finding efficient algorithms, and there's plenty of motivation in industrial reward if you find efficient algorithms for any of the hundreds of NP complete problems. And we have plenty of techniques at our disposal. We teach undergraduate courses on how to find polytime algorithms for things. And of course, there's also the Clay Math Institute $1 million prize recently if you succeed in finding a polytime algorithm for any of these problems. So there's plenty of motivation. On the other hand, we know we're lousy at separating complexity classes, and here's a good example. We know the sequence of inclusions, log space, is subset of P, subset of NP, subset of P space. Simple diagonal argument shows log space is a proper subset of P space. So one of those three adjacent inclusions has to be proper, but we can't prove any of them are proper. So there's a convincing argument. We're no good at separating complexity classes. So quite likely, because we're no good at if NP, let's contemplate, suppose Frege systems are super, how would you show they're super? Well, we're very good, it was to say every tautology has a short Frege proof. Well, how would you show that? The only way we know is to find an algorithm to find it, right? We're really good at finding algorithms, but if we believe P not equal NP, you're not going to be able to find the algorithm. So we have to find an existence proof that is non-constructive. And we further tend to believe that not only is P not equal NP, but satisfiability can't even be done in probabilistic polynomial time. And It just seems to be, the probabilistic method has been very successful in showing existence of things, existence of combinatorial objects by supposedly non-constructed means, by counting and so on. But in almost every case, the existence proof yields a randomized efficient algorithm, so you can find the thing after all. So that seems to be the fact. So how on earth are we going to go, now we believe you can't find the thing, suppose we believe it exists, the sharp proof exists, how on earth are we going to go about finding it and proving it exists? Well, we don't really have many such techniques. So I just leave that out as an intriguing possibility. Maybe, in fact, Fagan systems are super, but we have no idea how to prove it, and our belief that they're not is just based on lack of ability to imagine how to prove it. Anyway, so that's the conclusion. Maybe Fagan systems are super, so I know N equals going. Oh, by the way, yes, that brings to mind an embarrassment in the field about 12, 15 years ago, when it turned out that NL equals Cohen-L, and now it's non-deterministic log space. And I guess we had all assumed that non-deterministic log space was not closed under complements for not having thought about it very much, perhaps, I don't know. And so we were embarrassed when Immermann and then Charlotte Chappie showed in 1988, yeah, they are closed under complements, NL is closed under complements, and furthermore, what the worst proof isn't very hard. So as far as NP and Cohen P, I think the proof will be hard. I mean, it won't be an embarrassment in that sense. There's no simple proof that NP, but it's just something to contemplate. And the final thought is, even if Frege systems are super, so these examples like A equals I implies B equals I do have short Frege proofs, it's still probably the case. Our real intuition is, yeah, but those Frege proofs will be just by some funny randomized argument that doesn't really show you why they're true. And so a really equally interesting problem is to show, independent of the theory, that you still can't prove AB equals I implies BA equals I, for example, from LA. That's still a viable and good problem, probably much more doable and interesting in its own right. So that's all. Thank you.